You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to a special early release of episode number 36 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. We broadcast on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as on the Star Wars Report website, StarWarsReport.com. Our episodes are also available on our own Facebook page at facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms. But enough about how you got here. Let's get the show started. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler. With me, as always, my stalwart companion and the defender of the EU, Mr. Mark Herleman. Hey, Mark.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Me and Whistler are here once again and excited to talk to you about Star Wars and the expanded universe.
That's right. We ended last episode having gone through pretty much all the news from Celebration 6, but we still had a little bit more coming out around the same time about something a lot of Star Wars EU fans have been interested in, which is the revitalization of certain Star Wars non-video games coming from Fantasy Flight Games. So as somebody who's been following this very intently, because I'm planning on playing all of the games involved, we wanted to give you a little bit of the news about that so you know what's going on, get some initial thoughts back and forth, reactions from both of us. So I have to start by asking Mark, and I'll certainly toss in my side of this too, but Mark, from the standpoint of Star Wars miniatures games, card games, and RPGs, have you played any? And if you have, which ones have you been involved in playing previously?
Play? No. I did have a couple of the card games that I got here and there as a free thing from a friend. The RPG I bought most of and have most of the RPG materials. My roommate, in fact, he wants me to find a way to get one of those going. He really wants to do it. He's super excited when he found out I had them because he's a D&Der, so he's like big time into that kind of stuff. But it was always one of those things that I've never known anyone locally that has any idea how to play these type of games until just now. And so it's been one of those things where the whole concept has been over my head. It's kind of like that whole continuity tracking, that 35-2 and how that works out versus the BBY and after the Battle of Yavin, you know, that whole thing confuses me and perplexes me. And the D12 or D20 system is one of those where I'm like, huh, if it's not like KOTOR and it can do it for me, I'm really lost when it comes to role-playing games. But I got them because of the plethora of information and background information that they had that at the time weren't readily available in essential guides and other things that have come down the road later.
Yeah, I wound up, when it came to the RPG, for the most part, I was getting those for the same reason. I was getting them for the background information. For me, from an RPG perspective, I had some of the books and played around it, like learned the mechanics and played a tiny bit, just kind of playing out some things on my own or doing the solitaire adventures like Jedi Destiny or whatever Luke's was called, and Scoundrel's Luck, which was Han's story and such. So I did play some, but it tended to be stuff where I was sort of demoing it for myself as opposed to actively playing it. So I had some of the stuff from the old West End Games RPG materials back from the Dark Ages of Star Wars prior to and then shortly after the launch of the EU, where it was the one thing keeping Star Wars alive for a while. With Wizards of the Coast, I wound up having quite a few of the earlier books because at one point I was a reviewer for them for T-Bone Star Wars Universe, so they were sending me copies of them. You know, some of them I bought, a lot of them they just sent me review copies of so that I didn't wind up having to go and shell out $20-$30 for each book, because the price point a lot of times drives people away, I think, from the RPG stuff if you're just getting it as a source
book. Oh, absolutely. There were so many that I went down there and I wanted to get them, but I could only afford one or two of the smaller ones. And to this day, my friend, I am kicking myself in the rear for not getting the role-playing game for the KOTOR era. And instead, I got the Jedi Academy, and I came back the next day and it was sold out, and then I found out it was no longer in print. And had I known that fact, I wouldn't have bought the one that I bought. And I'm still irked about that.
Have I told you my story with the KOTOR book?
I don't think
you're going to want to kick me.
Everybody gather around. Nathan's got a story.
No, I at Con Carolinas a couple of years ago, I was looking through the Star Wars RPG books thinking, gee, I should pick up an RPG book. I decided to pass on the Force Unleashed campaign guide, which I later wound up getting off of eBay, and I decided, hey, I'll pick up the KOTOR guide because it was $60 and I saw it going on eBay for like $110. So I guess I kind of got it for a steal. It's still sitting there on the shelf. I haven't read through the thing yet. I haven't had the time, but I found it by accident, not realizing what I had found. So I guess it was kind of the happy accident the other way around, where it was an accident that turned out well. So I didn't really do much with the Saga Edition stuff with Wizards of the Coast when they revamped it again, because each time it seems like they're revamping the RPG after a few years to streamline the mechanics and whatnot. So I got some of the guides for Saga Edition, never even wound up picking up the starter book for Saga Edition, so I never really paid a lot of attention to the tweaks that were done with that. But I was excited this time when they said there was going to be a new RPG coming from Fantasy Flight, so I have gotten in on that. Miniatures-wise, I had a starter kit and maybe one or two expansion packs or whatever you want to call them for the Star Wars miniatures game from Wizards of the Coast, but that was something that I just kind of played around with just a little bit. I did like the fact that the stats and stuff somewhat mirrored and tied into the stuff from the RPG. For me, for Star Wars, a lot of times it was always the card gaming. When the Star Wars CCG first came out from Decipher,
Card gaming, is that like Magic? Just to try to get my head around this.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, like, the goal of the Decipher game is essentially to run the other side out of cards. You're playing individual characters down on sites. You know, there can be battles, and the battle damage winds up causing you to lose cards and that sort of thing. The Star Wars CCG actually is why I was able to even at all get my brain around Wars when I got a chance to write for it recently, because the Wars TCG was based on the old Decipher Star Wars CCG's game mechanic, so it wasn't that hard to learn. But I mean, I played that like crazy. I can't even tell you how much money I spent on individual cards of the rares. I mean, I had every single rare from the first two or three sets, almost entire collections of the sets, but I was playing it like crazy. Me and a friend of mine who for a while there was living with me, I mean, we'd play all the time. Didn't really get into it, though, once Wizards of the Coast sort of relaunched everything with the cards. I mean, I got maybe one starter pack of it, and otherwise just kind of let that stuff sit aside. Never did Pocket Models, never did Jedi Knights, or Young Jedi, any of those sort of side series. It never really kicked off as much as the original CCG did. So I was kind of, I was intrigued to see where this could go with new miniatures and with new card games, new RPG stuff. So I've been paying very close attention to Fantasy Flight games. And so far, what they're showing seems to be very, very promising, and we wanted to get our news in here about it because this is something that has been a big thing at Celebration 6, where they were doing a lot of floor demos and such, and at Gen Con shortly before that in Indianapolis. So just to run down some of these things, and I wanted to see what kind of reactions Mark would have, because it seems like something that should appeal to EU fans, but at the same time, I wonder if it's enough. I wonder if what they're doing with it is enough to say EU fans should get into it. Because I know there was a lot of EU fans who only bought the Decipher cards because of the lore and to collect them, the little information on the card about the characters and such. And then when Wizards of the Coast card game didn't have that kind of thing or didn't have much of it, a lot of fans who were collecting the cards just to collect said, forget it, I'm not going to collect these since I'm not playing. So I wonder how these will play. I guess, okay, so first off, you got the X-Wing miniatures game. This premiered at Gen Con. It should be shipping sometime in the near future for any of those who had pre-orders. It should be shipping from Fantasy Flight Games' own website, which is fantasyflightgames.com, and it should be shipping from all kinds of different retailers that they've been hooked up with as far as supply goes. But the idea is that you've got essentially these little miniatures of X-Wings, TIE Fighters, stuff like that, on these little sticks, of course, little stands, and on any playing surface, whether it's a table or anything else, you can sit out these ships, and you use cards and these little little dials that let you choose what maneuver you're going to do or choose whether you're going to attack and that sort of thing. And it's almost like a cross between a card game and a miniatures game in that you're trying to blow each other out of the sky as your ships move in different places relative to each other, but all the information of how you're firing, what type of weapons you can use, what type of bonuses you have, what type of special features your vehicle can use, all come from these cards. And it's a fun concept. I think they did it kind of with the Pocket Models thing, but it's a concept that doesn't seem like it's introducing a lot of new EU elements into anything. And the price point on these things is huge for someone who's just going to collect from an EU perspective. Before I mention the price, Mark, so far does it sound as like something of interest if the price was right?
Well, it depends, because, okay, I collect the die-cast figures, so it comes down to the look of the stuff. I recall in the past that they had a miniature-style ships and stuff like that for other type games. Some were paper and some were not. And the ones that were not looked really cool, but they had a really high dollar price on them, so I never could afford them. And so I just stuck with the die-cast. This gameplay style, though, it sounds like a expansion of the Starships of the Galaxy, which I have that RPG of, and how it would do its starfighter combat with the RPG. So it sounds like that's kind of like been enhanced. Like that section of the main RPG has just been retrofitted in a sense with some really cool dials and knobs. It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. But what are these? I mean, do these look more like the diecast styling, or are they more like the paper kind of like the, I mean, what would you say the quality on these are?
Oh, they're very high quality. They remind me of the diecast figures, except from what I can tell, they're a little bit smaller than a lot of the diecast ones that I've seen in stores recently. Those like what are they, titanium series or whatever they call them.
Yeah, the titanium.
But what I find interesting is that on some of these, like, for instance, the I believe it was the TIE Fighter, it's the first time anyone's actually done it to scale correctly with the actual models used for the film, if I'm understanding right. They went back to the original source models at Lucasfilm to go through and make these models as accurate as possible for their size. That really made me think, wow, this is a pretty high-end stuff. So, you know, I guess a higher price tag would be merited, but, you know, to me, a game that you're going to buy expansions for can't be too expensive. The price point on these, okay? So this, I think this makes it a game that you really only want to try out if you're really, really excited about it, unless you just go for a starter set, okay? But there is a way to mitigate the price, thank goodness. Right now, you've got the initial game, the starter set, comes with two TIE Fighters and one X-Wing. Now you may say, well, why has it only got one of one and two of the other? Why isn't it balanced? The way that you build your squadrons essentially is based on points. And each upgrade card, each pilot card and whatnot, all have different point values. So a much better pilot with a much better ship is going to cost more points than something that's a weaker ship with a weaker pilot. So in that case, it seems as though it's sort of balanced out by having two TIEs that aren't quite as good as the X-Wing and then just the one X-Wing. But that's set with two TIE Fighters, one X-Wing, the cards you need, the measuring tools that you need, all the dice that you need and everything, because it is a dice-based game. You roll dice to determine whether or not certain attacks have succeeded or failed, whether or not a ship was able to dodge an attack or not, all that kind of stuff. That initial set is being added to with an expansion set that includes one X-Wing and different cards. There's a Y-Wing expansion with one Y-Wing, a TIE Fighter expansion with another TIE Fighter, you know, the regular old TIE Fighter. Then you've got a TIE Advanced expansion, and you can buy another thing that's kind of an expansion that's an extra set of dice, so that both players have their own full set of dice instead of having to share one. Again, they're expecting release in the near future, sometime mid-September, but the retail price for the starter is $39.95. $40 for three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Each of the expansion sets, the retail price of the expansion sets are $14.95, and the price for just the extra dice set is $7.95. Now, I haven't been in miniature gaming ever before, aside from, like I said, just a little bit of dabbling in that Wizards of the Coast one, and that's because I had a box set of the thing. To me, that feels very, very expensive, especially when each of these expansions only has one ship in it. Maybe that's just me having no clue how the miniature game market works, but to me, that seems almost like something that should be a prohibitive price tag.
Well, for me, okay, the $39.95 for a starter deck, I want to say that that is almost comparative to one of the high-end style decks that you could get for, say, like Magic the Gathering. But the thing I'm noticing, okay, you got the two and you got the one, so you got two sides. So in your one starter set, you could have two people play. Now, you get any other expansion, and only one side is going to be gaining off of this. That's my problem there. It's like, okay, what if you didn't do the starter? You have to do the starter, right? You have to have certain tools that come in that. You couldn't just buy the expansion set and just be like, well, I got these expansion guys. I'm going to play with them instead of the starter set. Or yeah, you have to have the tools that came with the starter set to play the rest of the sets.
Yeah, you have to have the starter set to be able to play from what I can tell. And what I'm seeing actually on the Fantasy Flight Games message boards is there are quite a few people who are looking at the X-Wing and TIE Fighter expansion sets themselves, where it's just, I mean, you call it a set, but it's one ship with the other cards, that they're saying, you know, those other cards with other pilots are cool and all, but I want more miniatures. So instead of getting those expansions where they would spend $30 and get one X-Wing, one TIE Fighter, and the cards with them where some of them are different than the starter set, they're just buying two starter sets, saying I'll forego the extra other cards in order to, for $40, save basically $5 and get one more X-Wing and two more TIE Fighters instead of spending $30 to get you know, one of each, or spending 45 to get basically the same number as in the starter set. So it's a lot of consternation when it comes to the way the starter set is needed and how they're doing the expansions, it seems like. But again, it seems like it's from a lot of people who don't play a lot of miniature games, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing for me is like, okay, if as long as you got your starter pack and two people can play, that's not so bad. But if you had your starter pack and that only covered you, it's like, well, then you got to have another $39.95 for whoever you're going to play against. You know, and that's where it's like, I see a hard market here for a lot of people to play it. I mean, like, for me, the closest thing I can get to that I have played is Magic the Gathering. My local comic shop, still to this day, has tournaments there every Friday night or Thursday night. I can't remember. It's a Magic Gathering night, and they've got a really classic title that they've got with it. But it's one of those, I see that where you can buy added things and build to your deck, and, you know, and I wonder if you do the same thing. Do they have fleet styles of this, or is it all just single combat, one-on-one, dogfight?
So far, it's just one-on-one, but what they're showing now is there are going to be expansions. The rules leaves openings for a situation where you could have bigger squadrons, bigger fleets, really coming down to just how many points you and the other player agree to use, because the more points, the more ships, the more cards you can have. They are already showing, I believe it was they showed it at Gen Con first, they're showing A-Wing, Millennium Falcon, or I guess YT-1300, and Slave One or Fire Spray expansions also. So there are other ones on the way, so you can have bigger swarms of vehicles. But again, the price is a big issue. I will say I got a little lucky, and I'm hoping that by the time that folks out here listen to this, they still have things in stock, so you could order them if you wanted to. I was able to get a huge deal from the standpoint of these particular items. Instead of spending $40 on the starter set, I was able to get one for basically $26. Instead of paying $15 for every expansion, I basically paid $10. And for the dice, instead of paying $8, I paid basically $5. There's a website called Miniature Market, and they're essentially like, they are to miniatures games, apparently, what Amazon is to books. Maybe not as big, but the same type of idea that they put the stuff out there and there's significant discounts on them to start with because they want your business. And up to a certain amount or past a certain amount, you get free shipping. I think it's after, I want to say like, I think it's $100. So looking at that, I was able to basically spend about 80, give or take, including shipping, and get one of each of these products from this first product line, as opposed to spending well over 100 as I would have if I had bought them straight retail or through a couple other places that are pre-ordering them or through Fantasy Flight Games themselves, through their own store. So there is a way to at least make it more cost-effective, but still, you know, one of each expansion plus an extra set of dice plus the starter, the whole first lineup, not even thinking of future expansions, that is $80. But I guess, you know, for die-cast miniatures like that, all the dynamics to it, I know these games are somewhat expensive at times, and it's really only $20 more than, say, a PlayStation 3 game, you know, if you use the discount. I guess it's not that bad, but it's still, the price tag really shocked me at first, but I'm looking forward to the game. It looks fun, and it looks like quality products, just no new EU stuff to it. All characters we've seen before, for the most part, at least so far, it seems like, even in terms of names of pilots.
My issue with this is, like, I keep thinking, okay, how much fun is it going to be for me and you to sit down with two TIE fighters and one X-Wing and do dogfights? Yeah, it's going to be fun for a little bit, but after a while, I see this growing boring. But the opposite side of that is from a fleet battle, that would be exciting. Like you would see the fleet battle as like a war, and every single dogfight would be like a little mini battle to see who wins the overall war, and that could take a long time, but... like, you know, obviously they're not there yet, and it's going to be a while, but my first thought is, like, the Errant Venture and things like that, you know, ships of those natures, because I took with my diecast, I made my own Millennium Falcon, New Jedi Order Black, I made my own Black Stealth X-Wing, and I was not able to locate enough of those Star Destroyers to make a Errant Venture or an Anakin Solo, and I wanted to so badly.
Well, you know, there is one thing they're doing. I guess this sort of adds to the EU, just not much. Kind of in the same way that an RPG, the RPG scenarios add to the EU, but it's in very vague terms. Not a lot of story impact, but sort of a, this random character was on this random mission. This is what happened. Here's the circumstances of it, but we can't name the character because it was going to be your RPG character, that sort of thing. There are scenarios in the rule book that comes with the starter set. So apparently they are going to be doing scenario-based stuff. Like, for instance, instead of it just being the dogfight's goal is to wipe out the other side, it's stuff like, okay, there is this and you can use a coin or just a cutout or something. This, whatever it is, represents this little, like, supply ship, and you must escort the supply ship to safety. So every single turn, the supply ship moves forward a certain amount, and your goal is not to destroy all the TIE fighters or hold them off until the transport gets away, and their mission is not necessarily to destroy the X-Wing, but to avoid the X-Wing enough to destroy the transport. So there are some instances where you can play mission-based stuff. It's not just straight kick the other guy's butt. That seems like that's the main way people would play. But, you know, they have opened it up to scenarios. The scenarios really intrigue me for the potential, if you have a lot of the different figurines, a lot of the different minis. But of course, again, how much cost is going to be incurred in order to do that? So I'm excited for it. When it finally does come out, I'll probably do a YouTube video or something we can put up to show folks what it actually looks like in play. There are some out there now from Gen Con and whatnot if you want to see them online. It's just called the X-Wing Miniatures Game by Fantasy Flight Games. Usually it's FFG is how they abbreviate it in a lot of the titles for the YouTube videos.
Well, the scenario sounds like something that would be really fun. And it was like when you were first mentioning this, I could see, in a sense, using your original RPG, the Wizards of the Coast one, and when you get, like, to the starfighter battles, jumping over to that other game, doing your starfighter battle, then, okay, we're down on the planet now. We're going to go back to the other role-playing style, you know, where it's more Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, however that goes, and kind of mixing the two together. And I could see that actually working just in general with the way that this game is set up.
That's true. You could do that. And it doesn't seem like they're going to combine their products quite as much as, say, Wizards of the Coast did, with the stats being somewhat similar. But, yeah, you could jump back and forth. I mean, there's no telling, you know, what your creative gaming group could do if you've got enough people willing to experiment, certainly. Speaking of gaming, not a lot of news coming for the Star Wars LCG, or Star Wars The Card Game for Fantasy Flight Games, but there were some demos played at Gen Con and at Celebration 6.
This is the Magic-style card game, right?
Right, okay. Well, sort of. It's like that in play to a degree, but the way you buy it is different. What they've got here essentially is a game that plays similar to Magic or Netrunner or whatever other type of card game you may have played before. Pokemon. Gotta catch them all. No, thank you. Gotta vaccinate so I don't catch any of them. From the standpoint of the gameplay, card-based, you're based on the idea of trying to achieve objectives. So each side has certain objectives they must meet using their cards. It's not so much just beat up the other guy. It's do your objective, whatever it may be. What's actually very interesting about it is it started out as two things interesting, the way you buy it and how it started out and how it's changed. It started out actually as being listed as a cooperative game, that essentially there was like the evil empire, and that was what was represented by sort of the game itself to a degree, and then players would be able to cooperate, or you could play it by yourself to fight against
Rebel
the empire.
Rebel cells! Yeah. I like that.
But I mean, so the idea was that you would all play and sort of work together to win the game. Kind of like a video game trying to beat the game, as opposed to it being something like video game multiplayer where it was head-to-head. And there was a lot of consternation about that, a lot of people griping about that, and they hit a point where they made an announcement saying, the game just isn't turning out the way that we would like it to turn out, blah, 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 so we are essentially scrapping some stuff, starting from scratch on other aspects of it, and it's delayed the outcome of the game. It'll still be out by the end of 2012, probably, but don't expect anything quite so soon as you thought. And then here they are finally coming out and showing this new game, and it's been changed to be kind of the classic player versus player, head-to-head type of game. You got your cards very much like you would have with the Decipher game, very much like with the Wizards of the Coast trading card game. The objectives thing makes it a little bit unusual. But what I like about it, and what I think is going to make it so that it's more accessible to people who are EU fans, who just want to collect the sets, is the way that you buy them. I, for instance, recently bought Shadow Era. Shadow Era is an online trading card game that you can play on PC, on iTunes, etc., etc. It's a free-to-play game, but you can buy cards through it. And they just recently decided that they were going to, or they just recently put out physical cards. They're not even in stores yet in most places. They did a pre-order thing. And what got me to buy the pre-orders of the cards, aside from just liking the game, was there was a way you could buy a set. They call it the Collector's Edition. You get one of every single card. So you can put it in a binder and have it as a set. Not something you usually
That's
get
cool.
when you play a card game. Of course, you can't buy those like that now. Now it's going to be booster packs and starter decks and stuff like that. But at least to start with, you can have a whole set if you pre-ordered. Well, that's the whole mechanic behind these LCGs, or living card games, that Fantasy Flight Games puts out. What they do is they essentially sell you a starting game. And that game has every single card in the first set. And you use those cards to play the game. You need no more than the one set to play for however many players are listed on the box, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And then what they do is, as time goes on, about once, twice, three times a year, whatever, they release expansion sets, but even then, those expansions are the entire set of cards in one purchase. So, you know, they may cost a little bit more than, say, buying the equivalent number of booster packs, but at the same time, if you bought a certain number of booster packs, just because you bought 100 cards worth doesn't mean you got every one of the 100 cards.
Absolutely.
You're probably going to be missing a ton.
That sets me at ease, because I am OCD like that. When I was back in my Marvel collecting days, I used to collect Marvel cards in the same way, and I remember buying whole boxes of cards, trying to get one or two cards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Yeah, and they honestly should do that with the other game you were talking about, the Fantasy Flight game. That'd be cool, too, to have packs that had a whole wave. I know.
But I mean, that's what it is. The Fantasy Flight, the Shadow Era doesn't do it, but Fantasy Flight's whole thing, all their card games work like that.
That's awesome.
Well, there's a Game of Thrones one, there's a Lord of the Rings one, tons and tons of card games, but they're all based around the idea of you buy once, and because there's no frustration of looking for cards, we can put out these other sets, you know, every few months, and that'll keep you as a loyal customer picking up more sets because you know what you're getting, and you know you're getting the whole set. I love that idea. I wish more companies had done it over time, but it looks very cool. It looks like a fun game. I don't like the fact that now there's no way to play it as a single player because, you know, I usually don't have many people to play with, and unless I get my fiance to play with me, you know, I'm going to be sitting here just kind of looking through the cards as opposed to playing them. But it's one of those things where it looks exciting, and the fact that they went back to the drawing board when they thought it wasn't what it was, it wasn't living up to the license, gives me hope that they really are taking the license very seriously to make something that is really a unique game that fits the feel of Star Wars and can actually be something we can be proud to see added to the legacy of stuff like the old CCG. So not a lot of news about it, but a cool concept, and I'm hoping we'll hear more about it in the near future instead of having to wait till the end of the year, because it almost seems like a holiday season release the way it sounds right now.
Yeah, and one last question on the cards and how the gameplay works. Okay, so you get the whole set. Now, like in Magic, you have these enchantments that you put on, like, say, a creature, like, we'll say, Unholy Strength. And you can have up to, I think, 4 of them in a deck. Do they have cards like that that work that you could get more, like, if you wanted to buy just a single card from, like, a comic shop that sold them or something like that, that you could add it to it? Or that just be pointless because you have the one deck and it's got all the cards in it and you're not supposed to have more than any one?
I think it's a matter of, you know, you just have the one deck, you're not supposed to have any more, but that may not be the case. I'm not as familiar with the if you want to use multiple ones, but I think what they've done is tried to make sure that each set that you get is balanced as best as it can be so that you don't wind up feeling the need to do stuff like that. But
that is cool. I got hats off to a company that does that. That's something that from the OCD collector in me and the comic collector that gets singles and every now and again, one Spider-Man or one Fantastic Four slipped through my fingers. That can be bothersome very badly.
Quite so. Now, the biggest stuff coming out, and they're sort of tied together, is their DICE app, which I'll get to, but also the new Star Wars RPG that's coming. This has a lot of people excited. Kind of out of nowhere, Fantasy Flight Games announces, hey, we've got a Star Wars RPG in the works. And by the way, this Star Wars RPG, it's not quite ready yet. We're still in the process of playtesting and such. It won't come out till probably 2013, maybe even 2014. But we have a beta version, like a test version, a trial version. And we're going to produce about, I think it was like 5,000 copies of this. And it's first come, first serve. What we'd like you to do is buy it if you want it and try it out and then give us feedback and we'll use that feedback to help us improve and prepare the final version of the product. It's called Edge of the Empire, Star Wars Edge of the Empire role-playing game. The beta was just released within the last month and as of, I guess, the day before we're recording this, it has officially sold out. Every single copy that could be ordered through Fantasy Flight Games, for U.S. orders at least, totally sold out. They are out of stock. There are some places, some companies that have bought several copies of the game so they could sell them in their stores or use them as demos in their stores. Those are getting shipped out actually the week that we're recording this and should be showing up. So you might be able to get one from a local retailer. But apparently the demand for this was huge, even though this unfinished version, as a lot of people were complaining, that was sold, you know, online and sold at Gen Con and sold at Celebration 6, retails for $29.95, which for an RPG book isn't that bad, but it is essentially just a beta test, and there was a minimum shipping of $11.05. So it cost me $41 to get this one starter book for the RPG. My guess is actually, though, that when they finally put out the real deal, it'll probably be more like anywhere between 60 and 100, because they have a tendency with Fantasy Flight games to not just give you the one book, they give you multiple books, plus all the dice you need and any other stuff you're going to need for the game, all in one giant box set, so you don't have to buy it all separately. The concept basically is that you have a story set during the time period of the classic trilogy, right around that time, and they're doing something a little different. I mentioned how with the RPG, I didn't always follow it because they tended to switch things. I think West End Games had a first edition, second edition, then a third edition. I think there was a third. With Wizards of the Coast, it was first edition, then they expanded it, then they had the Saga edition, where they keep tweaking it and sort of relaunching it. And you feel like you sort of have to rebuy the starter book every few years. What they're doing this time is sort of giving you three different starter books. Instead of having one starter book and three different source books covering different aspects of the Galactic Society, it's three different starter books that have all the starting information in it, plus information for that particular part of Galactic Society. So it's kind of a cross between having three different starter books and three different source books. You get these three hybrid type books. You got Edge of the Empire, which is focused on the fringes of society. So you're talking about smugglers, you're talking about people out there sort of in the Outer Rim and whatnot. There's going to be a second one called Age of Rebellion, which focuses on the Rebel versus Imperial conflict. And you got a third called Force and Destiny, which will finally bring the Jedi into play. But this is the Rebel Alliance classic trilogy era. So these are going to be the
titles, though.
Yeah, they'll be the remaining Jedi that are left, as opposed to them being essentially Jedi in the grand scheme of things, like, you know, like we saw in the prequel trilogy where they're gallivanting all over the place. There's been some issue where people were complaining about, well, does that mean we can't use Force users until that third one? There are Force users in Edge of the Empire, the first one. They're already in the beta, just not many of them. I've heard complaints about people saying, well, you're going to have us getting, you know, three different starter books. They're really sort of three different product lines, three different RPG games that you could play separately, but they all use the same mechanics so you can interchange them. So if you want to play just on the fringe, you can. Just as a Jedi stuff, you could. But it technically all plays in together, just like you didn't have to buy necessarily every single source book to play the old RPG books. What I find is, it seems pretty interesting. I'm about halfway through or so reading the starter book, maybe a little bit less. But this beta starter book, I will say it's not extremely, it doesn't have a lot of options in it. The beta book, if you're thinking about buying it, whether it's eBay or otherwise, because I'm sure somebody's going to wind up putting it on eBay, or if you're trying to find it through a retailer, right now, this version only has 8 species to choose from so far. Bothan, Droid, which they count as a species or type of character, Gand, Human, Rodian, Trandoshan, Twi'lek, or Twi'lek, and Wookiee. You have 6 careers to choose from right now: Bounty Hunter, Colonist, Explorer, Hired Gun, Smuggler, and Technician, and there's 3 specializations available per career. So for the 6 careers, you wind up with essentially 18 possible career paths. What I actually find interesting about this is the way a couple of the game mechanics work. I mean, it pretty much feels like a similar role-playing game to anything you've seen before. Here's some stats. You use the stats, you play the game master tells the story, and you stay in character and you make decisions. In that sense, you know, all this means is, wow, since Wizards of the Coast lost the license in 2010, we haven't really had much in the way of Star Wars role-playing material. Finally, we get a new Star Wars role-playing game. That's awesome in and of itself. Bear in mind, the beta book doesn't have a lot of sort of background information, not a lot of new EU content that you could actually use out of this book. So if you're going to buy it for a source book, don't. It's not really
okay,
that type
of book.
Okay,
because that was the question I've been biting on my tongue. I'm like, man, this sounds like something I want to get. There's the name Edge of the Empire. I'm like, ooh, all that entitles.
Yeah, the starter book might, like the actual Edge of the Empire, when the actual finished starter book releases, whenever that may be, might have it. But this is basically game mechanics to make sure that it all works, to see if there's any things that need to be tweaked before the final version comes out, all that kind of stuff. So in that sense, you know, you can get it, you can play it, but don't expect a lot of extra EU background, though it seems very interesting. The two mechanics that I find the most interesting, though, are obligations and the way they use the dice. The obligations thing is that every single character or group of characters, depending on how you want to set it up, when you first start the game, you have to choose an obligation. The idea is that on the fringes, everybody kind of owes a favor to somebody or has something that's driving them. Not a motivation. Motivations are a separate thing in the game. But something like, I owe a debt to Jabba the Hutt. Or, I am seeking revenge on so-and-so. And what it does is, at first, you just start out with, you need that one obligation. And there will be times where you will roll a dice right before you play a session of the game with your friends. And if it lands a certain way, that obligation comes into play. And what might have been a scenario that was designed around the idea of maybe going on a spice run, now the game master will now work in some aspect of your obligation to make it that much more impactful and difficult. Like, you thought you were flying under the radar, but nope, the dice say your time has come up. Now, Jabba the Hutt will turn out to be the guy who's behind this smuggling ring, so he's on your butt again because you still haven't paid him back or something like that.
Cool. So, like, in theory, like, you know, you're Han, you're going out and you're, you know, doing your thing with the rebels. You're going to try to get some money opportunity and, hey, oh, you got this obligation to pay off Jabba. Here's a chance. So got to pause the rebel mission or do both at the same time.
Exactly. It's like essentially you have a number to go with your obligation depending on how many people are playing. So if you got three players, or I guess we'll go with four. So you got four players. Each one is expected to start with 15 obligation points for whatever it is. And what you do is you'd have a stack of numbers, you know, 1 to 15, 16 to 30, and so on, all the way up to 100. And you'd roll one of these what's called a percentile dice that has, you know, 100 different results, which is essentially two different dice at the same time, one for the tens place, one for the ones place. But you roll it, and whatever range it falls in for a particular character, like if you're the character whose obligation is represented by numbers 1 to 15, and you roll like a 7, well, your obligation just came into play. Your issue is now going to cause problems for the group. But more interestingly, just like you can sort of, in the Star Wars universe, you can think of someone, you know, I need more money, so I'm going to borrow from a loan shark, but uh-oh, this is going to go bad. Or I need more cash for weapons, so I'm going to have to put my ship in hock to a hut or something.
Just the ship alone. Because that's one of the ones I've actually read cover to cover, was the ship, Starships of the Galaxy. And to modify your ship cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things, you couldn't just pimp out your ship right away. The game mechanics wouldn't let you.
But see, this one has a mechanic that will let you, but it plays
obligation. Awesome.
Yeah, because you start with a certain obligation and you're just kind of, you know, you're just there. I mean, you're just, this is what your obligation is.
So
you have to,
to say dock out in wild space for taking your YT-2400 and making it faster than Dash Rendar's and more powerful than the Millennium Falcon. And you could have the epic, awesome ship that you've been, I mean, because like I said, I went back and forth on that book. I made 15 different ships. I worked every one of them into my fan fiction. That was what the role-playing game turned more into in the end, was help in my role-playing / fan fiction stuff that I was doing on forums and stuff. And so I would modify all these ships and stuff. But when I read the gameplay, I was like, man, that would be such a drag not to be able to take whatever, you know, this, that, and the other thing and put it on there. But to have that and have it actually add to the story makes this something that I might actually want to play down the road.
Well, the whole focus is on story aspect. What I was trying to say was you have your starting obligation. Everybody has in your group has an obligation, or the group has one. So you already start with something where you owe someone a favor, and that's not for anything. That's just something that's a fact of life of when we're picking up in this point of your lifetime, you've already got some kind of obligation. But if you want to, what you can do is during creating your character, in order to get more experience points to spend at the beginning to create your character, in order to get more starting credits to buy stuff like modifying your ship, you could say, okay, I'm going to take another obligation. I'm going to take another obligation. And the more obligations you take, the bigger your number is, and the more likely it is that you're going to roll that dice and your obligation is going to come back to haunt you the next time you play. But it's not just going to haunt you, it's you and everyone you're playing with. Because it's altering the odds of someone's obligation coming up, but it's a trade-off where you essentially get to make these deals and use it that way. Now, you talk about story being the key. Wait till we get to the dice. The dice is a big deal when it comes to the story.
Well, what if, okay, I've taken five obligations and I land on one. Now, is it the GM's obligation to say which one of those obligations I am doing, or do I pick and choose? How does that work when you have multiples and it lands on obligation?
If I remember correctly, it's based on the GM being able to choose what actually works for it. In fact, technically, the GM does have the ability to, when it comes to an obligation check, in theory they could, if it really doesn't fit the story, could have someone else's obligation come into play and just sort of swap that out so the next time that character comes up, then let's go back to that other one that should have had one before. Because it's not meant to derail the storytelling so much as it's meant to be something that adds an extra layer of suspense to it, perhaps. Moreover, Okay, and you can pay down the obligation, like as you get experience points from doing different things, you can use that to sort of pay down what you owe so that you're not as likely to hit the obligation. But again, that's up to the game master, you know, how much of what you do can be put towards that. So he has some sense of making sure there's always still tension. What I love is the dice. If you played the old game from, and this is from memory from way back, so excuse me if I'm messing up any mechanics here, but in general what you would have with the old D6 game, a six-sided dice game from West End Games, or the D20, 20-sided and other dice that you would have from Wizards of the Coast, was that say you're running into a scenario where you have to, you know, get into a firefight, or you must survive something. The whole process would involve essentially the GM, the game master, would set up a specific number representing the difficulty. Like, oh, this is easy, this is difficulty number 5, or this is harder, it's difficulty number, I don't know, 100, or whatever it might be. And they're always sort of basing that difficulty number on a set scale, but also what your abilities are. And then you simply roll the dice, and most of the time it seems like it was simply you either did well or you did poorly. You either beat whatever the odds were, so you did it because you beat the difficulty number that they set, or you didn't and you failed. And in some cases, you had the situation where, you know, the extent by which you failed could make consequences worse. The extent to which you succeeded could make things better. And the little odd mechanics in there, like botches and whatnot, so that, you know, maybe something goes horribly wrong in the middle of something. But a lot of times it was based on just sort of a set number where it felt like there wasn't a lot of chance on the side of what you were up against. You know, like if you were going up against a computer system in slicing, it didn't seem like there was much of a chance that the computer system itself might perhaps have a glitch or something that made things temporarily easier for you because, you know, maybe it was rebooting its antivirus software or something. You know, it seemed like it was usually you that could fail, you that could succeed. And from the standpoint of the little incidental things, it tended to be things that your character had some level of control over. What they've done with this is they've created a system that uses numerous dice, and they're proprietary dice. You have to have them for the game, but there is a dice app for $4.99 on either Android or iOS, the Apple products. You can get this dice app that has all the dice that you would ever need, because you can roll multiple ones just by tapping it on the screen. All the dice you would need for the RPG, all the dice you would need for X-Wing, and eventually, if there are dice with the card game, they're going to also include those in an update. So instead of buying a bunch of dice, you can just have it on this app, which I would highly, highly recommend. I actually put up some pictures of that dice app on my Flickr, flickr.com/, it's just Nathan P. Butler is where you can find it. But get this, when you enter a scenario that is a challenge to you, it's not just a set number. The person who's the game master doesn't just say, well, the difficulty is 32 or whatever. Instead, there's a difficulty setting that tells you how many difficulty dice get involved. Simple is none, easy is one, all the way up to formidable being 5. And you've got 7 different kinds of dice. One is the force dice. That has to do with essentially you're rolling during the game most of the time at the beginning of the game to have dark side and light side points that let you do things that can be spent to help you surpass a situation that might otherwise be insurmountable. But what I like about the way that they use the force dice is that, yes, you start out with a pool of light side and dark side points, but let's say you start out with 4 points total, 4 force points. Maybe it's a 2 light, 2 dark. Well, each time a light side force point is used, it doesn't just get spent, it becomes dark. Now the game master has 3 dark side force points they could use to make your life tougher. But every time the GM uses a dark side one, it becomes light, and now you have a new out to help you out.
Balance is achieved.
The force dice I haven't really read a whole lot about, but I love that aspect of it, just from the setup of the game to start with and the whole idea of force points. Otherwise, what you've got are 3 positive and 3 negative dice. The positive dice, you've got a green, I believe it's an 8-sided dice called the ability dice, and you have a yellow 12-sided die, called a proficiency die, and then you have a 6-sided blue one, like powder blue, called a boost die. And essentially what you've got is, say you have a certain level of proficiency or a certain level of skill in, shooting a target, shooting an enemy down. What you do is you roll, just like you would in most games, you roll a certain number of ability dice, in this case, those green ability dice. But what happens is, let's say you've got a characteristic like, just to make something up, because I'm not looking at the book off the top of my head right now, say you've got a characteristic of intellect that'll let you slice computers and such, that might be 3 ability dice, but you might have a level of 2 in specific computer hacking, or computer slicing. Those two things play together, and you take the top number of the 2, the biggest one, and that's how many ability dice you start with. and that gives you a certain number of chances to succeed. But that other number, the lower number that also applies to the situation, that number of your ability dice, because it's less than before, so you've got to have less than the original number. Say you had 3 to start with in ability dice. Let's say you got 2 in the other thing. It changes 2 of those ability dice into the 12-sided proficiency dice instead, which gives you more chances to succeed. So your skills, both generic and specific, both play in at the same time, not one or the other. And if there's some kind of bit to the situation or some ability that you might use that can help you out in the situation, maybe it's something where it's a firefight, but it just so happens that there was steam on the other side of the battlefield, so it makes it harder for the other side to see, then you get that boost dice, that little blue one added into the mix. On the other hand, though, on the difficulty side of things, when the game master says, okay, this is, say, difficulty of, you know, whatever it is, it's going to have 3 difficulty dice. So let's say it's hard, so you got 3 difficulty dice. There are, matching the green ability dice, there are purple 8-sided difficulty dice. And that's how many difficulty dice the other side rolls. Not some set number. They roll these. And again, if there's a certain thing that makes the situation particularly more difficult, then they can switch those from being the little 8-sided dice, or dice, plural, into a red challenge die, which has 12 sides and has more chances of failure. And then the same thing where if there's something oddball that's happening, just like there's that 6-sided boost dice you can have, there is a black 6-sided setback die that can be added into the mix. And the whole idea is what you've got here is a whole bunch of dice going at once in what's called the dice pool, and they all roll at the same time. So you gather up all the ones for the difficulty, you gather up all the ones for your abilities and the things that are for you, and you roll them. And you have different symbols that pop up. And there's these success symbols that pop up and failure symbols. And every success symbol cancels out a failure symbol and vice versa until you hopefully have at least one success symbol left, and hey, chance was on your side on both sides of this equation, both difficulty and your abilities, you have managed to succeed. But at the same time, though, there are other symbols called advantage or threat, and those can cancel each other out, but any advantages that are left out there have no bearing on whether you succeed or not. If there are any left, it causes positive side effects in the story, and threats cause negative side effects in the story. There's also symbols on the 12-sided die or dice called triumph and despair. Triumph is a really powerful success because it counts as a success to go along with your other successes, but it also adds a really emphatic positive side effect, and despair does the opposite in a very negative way. So you could have a situation where you roll the dice, and rather than it being something like in a lot of the other games where it's simply, here's the number, you either did well a lot, did well a little, maybe you did poorly, but only by a little bit, or really, really screwed it up. Here what you've got is, not only are you rolling to see if you succeeded or not, but the odds are that every time you do something, good or bad, there are side effects. And you might succeed, but at the same time have a negative side effect happen. You shot the enemy, but that's the moment in which your blaster jammed. Or you hacked the computer, but you set off a red flag somewhere. You got the information that you wanted, but something else is going off that's now causing them to lock down the spaceport to keep anybody from leaving because they know somebody's there stealing the information. It's an incredibly dynamic...
Or you captured the hostage and you got outside and found a really nice speeder and you managed to get that too. I like how it is all story-driven, though. I think that's the number one thing about this that I think is going to be an improvement on the last series of RPGs. You know, I definitely think, though, from what you've explained with the dice alone, that that app's going to be the way to go.
Oh, yeah,
that sounds like it's going to take a lot of table just with the dice. You know, I mean, that app would free up so much. Mm-hmm. If you could do it on a phone. I mean, yeah, I just got into the smartphones and all that stuff. So these apps are just awesome and the capabilities and stuff. But you said this app will work for more than just this one RPG, right? It works for all of them.
It works for the RPG. You can use it for the X-Wing game that they're putting out. Wow. You can use it in theory if there's anything to roll for the Star Wars card game, the living card game that they're doing. And it also, I mean, it's got generic dice in it too, so you could technically use it for anything you wanted to use it for. You just go to the generic dice instead of their specific ones. One thing I would say, if you do get the beta does not come with the dice. I would suggest getting the app. It does come with a sticker sheet to make dice if you have ones of the right sizes, but honestly, the stickers, from what I'm hearing, they don't work as well as they probably should, just because the dice already might have like some dampness on the outside, or, you know, finger smudges or whatever that make it so that they don't necessarily stick as well as they should. Plus, you know, if you're getting it as a collector, you want to keep that sticker sheet pristine. But I got to say, the idea of let's have dice that don't just tell you success, they influence the story to keep the game master on their toes and the players, so that any event is not just about you did it right or you did it wrong, but there's all these little nuances to it. It's going to take a new breed of GM from the game masters that I've known who are able to think on their feet. But at the same time, the possibilities become so much more broad for the storytelling. This is the one time I've ever seen a new Star Wars RPG product and not been looking forward to the expansions as far as EU material. I actually want to play this. I want to find a way to take this to Skype, perhaps somehow, and play this with some listeners, perhaps, and give them a chance to experience it if I can find a way to do it, and just you know, see how this works in a real-life type of setting while it's still in the beta mode, because there are so many aspects of this that feel like, wow, they're really giving us something new for Star Wars. Granted, the beta does not have a lot of species and careers. It's somewhat limited to start with. But the storytelling dynamics are great. I love the way they set up the storytelling dynamics. I think it's based somewhat off of one of their other RPGs that they've done, maybe one of their Warhammer ones. For Star Wars, absolute breath of fresh air.
Sounds like Google Hangout might be a place to do that, where everybody can have their own camera so you can make sure no one's cheating with their dice. You know, there's a lot of really cool stuff. Nathan, you threw a lot down on the gauntlet. I'm sure the listeners will be appreciative. I for one, have been curious about all this stuff. You know, I've been hearing it. I've got enough, you know, I follow you as well. But there's a couple other people on Facebook and Twitter that are doing these kind of things. And, you know, what I'm hearing, it sounds like it's going to be really cool. And, you know, the fact that it's story-driven, like I said, I got my RPG stuff to help me with my own fan fiction, because it was fun to get those little details and to help make what you were doing, you know, immersive. And this is a game that, in a sense, is a fan fiction. You're a living fan fiction, you know, and I just think that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to my new roommate. You know, he seems really excited to do this kind of stuff. And this might be a game that me and him might need to look into doing, because there is some really cool potential here from an EU standpoint, just from a Star Wars standpoint, but also from the community standpoint. You know, I mean, our community is by and large online, you know, but there is that small contingent of role players and 501st members and cosplayers that still get together in the physical flesh, hang out and enjoy and talk about their Star Wars. And I love the fact that there are still products like this that are out there that are finding ways, even in this online age, you know, like you're talking about doing it on Skype, and we're thinking about, you know, Google Plus here is, or Hangouts or whatever, that they're able to market on that and find ways to bring people together and still caring about this thing that we love that is Star Wars. And that's just frippin' awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know it's meant to be a mini episode. I don't know. We may have wound up with a bigger episode as I'm bloviating on all these cool things that I'm so excited about. But I think that Star Wars gaming outside of video games has needed a kick in the butt. It's needed something to really kind of get it going again. And I think these particular products, these product lines, these are really solid games, and this is from a company that has a track record of doing really good games in ways that are somewhat innovative, like the idea of the living card game where you just buy the sets instead of the boosters. I'm very excited to see where this can wind up going, and hopefully the listeners will be excited too. And for those who are like, wow, man, not a lot of EU, it's just the games, man. Well, hey, you know, we didn't take up a whole nother Wednesday for you. This was an episode between episodes, so consider it a bonus.
Those poor gamers out there, think about them. How many episodes, you know, we never talk about their games. This is their time to shine. Now, before we stop, I want to take a moment here to ask you a question that's near and dear to my heart when it comes to all my Star Wars and EU books. What size is this book? And what kind of bookshelf is it going to fit on? Because, and I say this because Wizards of the Coast went from the gigantic one, the size of your essential guides, in a sense, and then went to that weird, small, but longer book style that I really think that's what killed them in the end, because they switched that style, and I absolutely hated that. But what are we looking at? I mean, granted, you've got a beta, and that's probably not what the final version is going to look like, but I want to get somewhat of an idea of right now, what would my bookshelf need to clear to fit this book on it?
I'll tell you, it is as tall as an issue of Star Wars Insider, because I just sat one on top of it to check. It is about the thickness and the width, I would say, of an essential guide. And it's
that's good. Then.
See, page count, 220 some odd pages if you count the index and whatnot. I mean, I would say it's about the same size as maybe the Essential Guide to Warfare. Perhaps it's not. It doesn't seem like it's got the dimensions quite of Essential Atlas, where it was sort of oversized. But
yeah,
know, kind of
Atlas
typical
won't
Essential
fit.
Guide.
I've got this for my Essential Guides in my role playing games. I've got one of those cork board, and I know I'm not using the right terms, but they're those hole boards where you slide the little tool things in. And I got one that's a magazine rack, and they fit wonderfully, beautifully. The Atlas doesn't, and neither do that other style of the Wizards of the Coast. But just to find out that this is about comparative to the Essential Guides, that's cool for me because I know that that'll fit on one of my shelves. You know, that's one of those things. I will always ask about that because, hey, you know, when you invest into the collections like me and Nathan do, you got to invest into a nice bookshelf. Sooner or later, you're going to have to. That free one that you got, that one that your mom and dad bought you for Christmas, sooner or later, it's going to get too small for the collection. And at that point, you're going to have to stop and think, do I invest into a nice wood one? Do I make one of my own? What am I going to do? And inevitably, you're going to find a book that isn't going to want to fit on that shelf. And for me, that just drives me up a wall. So that's one of those things that's always near and dear to my heart is like, where is it going to fit on my shelf?
Yeah, I think I'm eventually going to get to the point with the Star Wars books that I need one of those things where you have the ladder that can like roll around the walls because it's getting ridiculous, the sheer amount of shelves that I've had to buy. But all for a good cause, all for the saga.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to go ahead and wrap up this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. Thanks for listening again. And remember, you can listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as streaming on the Star Wars Report website, www.starwarsreport.com. Our episodes are also available right on our Facebook page, at SW Beyond Films. Just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in our search bar. You can find us. Bam, there we are. No matter how you find it, though, be sure to like the page. It is the best way to interact with us. Not only can you post comments while you're listening to the show, you just might actually be heard. We do read back emails, so send them in. We have feedback episodes. As long as you send us enough to do an episode, there we go. If not, we're going to save it and we'll have a bigger one later. But it'd be nice if we had enough feedback to do one every month. That was the original goal. But if we don't, that's why. So again, fire off. Send it out there. Fire off that email at swbeyondfilms@starwarsfanworks.com.
So, once again, this has been the overly verbose Nathan P. Butler.
And the rarely quiet Mark and Whistler.
Oh, Whistler was very quiet. Saying, may the force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds of how many dice you're going to need to play this game.
They're all pretty different colors.